From the WKER studios on the campus of Michigan State University in East Lansing, welcome to Current State. Hello, I'm WKAR Digital News Director Reginald Hardwick. We start with new attention on the opioid crisis. The Michigan Department of Health and Human Services says drug overdoses killed 2,300 people in our state last year. Just days ago, President Donald Trump declared a public health emergency to help combat the problem.
The fact is, this is a worldwide problem. Addressing it will require all of our effort, and it will require us to confront the crisis in all of its very real complexity. Last year, we lost at least 64,000 Americans to overdoses. That's 175 lost American lives per day. That's 7 lost lives per hour in our country. Drug overdoses are now the leading cause of unintentional death in the United States by far.
In a few minutes, learn how a mid-Michigan police department is dealing with opioid overdoses. But first, a revealing conversation on how people get addicted and what this declaration will mean for people who need help.
And joining us now is Dr. Jed Magan, Associate Professor and Chair of the Department of Psychiatry at MSU. Thank you for joining us. Let me ask you first about your reaction and what does it mean for the opioid crisis to be declared a public health emergency?
I think it's high time to do that. This is an issue that's been had been simmering for years and then really exploded over the last couple of years. And you've got 150, maybe more people dying every day from overdoses of opiates in this country. So it's really just a huge problem. There's no end in sight.
How does a person become addicted?
There are really a couple of pathways into addiction. So one is the kind of thing that happens often to somebody who's a teenager. And remember, teenagers are pretty impulsive people for a whole bunch of really good biological reasons. And so they may try something given to them by a helpful friend or colleague, and they like the feeling. So that's called hedonic pleasure. Hedonia means pleasure. And so they go after that and chase that more and more. And it feels good, so they do it more, and eventually what they develop is this physiological addiction to the substance. That's one pathway. The other really unfortunate pathway is through physicians. For years, we as physicians were told that, well, if you have pain, you can't really develop addiction, so you ought to give those opiates. We know that's absolutely false. So people get pain medication. They get opiates for their pain. And what happens is, of course, they feel better, at least temporarily. Well, over time, two things happen. One is that they tend to need an increasing amount of the medication to kind of keep the pain at the same level. And the other is, let's say you've got back pain and you're not feeling, you know, you're feeling pretty good. You can injure yourself more without knowing it. So over time, people need more of the substance. And so they go back to their physicians, who now are less and less willing to prescribe more and more. So what's their alternative? Well, if they don't want to withdraw, they've got to find it somewhere else. So they doctor shop or they go out on the streets and they try to get it. So those are really the two pathways.
How pervasive is it?
You can go into any high school you want, and you will find people using opiates. You can go into any workplace you want. You can go into Michigan State University, and you will find people with opiate issues. And, of course, one of the things we're finding is that there are lots of industries that are short of workers. And one of the reasons they're short of workers is they drug test these people, and they're positive, and they can't hire them. So if you think it's not your problem, absolutely it's affecting you either directly or indirectly.
What are some of the paths for treatment?
Well, the first thing you got to realize is that withdrawal from these substances is nasty. It is really unpleasant. And if you talk to enough addicts, what they'll say is, I'm really tired of doing this, but I can't stop because I'll go into withdrawal. So what we do first is we do what's called drug-assisted withdrawal treatment. There are a number of medications we use that can really dampen the symptoms of the withdrawal. That's relatively easy to do, actually, and that's a couple-a-day process. And people actually feel much better. And interesting thing is people who are treating pain actually tend to feel less pain after they withdraw. Then the issue, and the bigger issue really, is how do you keep them off the substances long-term? And the state-of-the-art treatment is really one, what are called relapse prevention medications. So there are a couple of medications people ought to be on to help prevent relapse, and then it's a matter of different types of therapy, and really importantly, disconnecting yourself from the social situations where you used or where you're able to get drugs. So in terms of of treatment of opiate addiction, lots and lots of centers that do this kind of treatment really don't use medications, which is they will use medication sometimes for withdrawal, but they won't for follow-up for relapse prevention. And it's really important that we move the state of the art along in these kinds of centers that don't use these medications. Relapse prevention medications are really state of the art and really important to use. And then you've got to have the availability of treatment. And so we expanded Medicaid in the state. And what that allowed us to do was really provide withdrawal treatment for many, many more people than they otherwise would have. So if you don't like Medicaid expansion, you ought to think again, because this is one area in which it's been incredibly helpful.
And then how will declaring a public health emergency impact that?
Yeah, the virtue of declaring a public health emergency is that it suspends some Medicaid rules around what they can pay for. And so to some extent, it'll allow more people to get into withdrawal treatments. And secondly, it really allows better coordination among federal agencies. So agencies like the DEA and like Health and Human Services and so on, you know, this is such a huge problem. What you really need from the federal government is kind of a full court press and lots and lots and lots of cooperation between agencies.
Well, thank you for joining us, Dr. Jed Magan, Associate Professor and Chair of the Department of Psychiatry at MSU.
My pleasure.
It's up to individual police departments to figure out how to deal with opioid overdoses in their communities. Now, in his own words, East Lansing Police Lieutenant Chad Connolly tells us how his department deals with the crisis.
Luckily, East Lansing's a very good community, and we haven't seen the effects of opioids like some of our neighboring communities have, but that doesn't mean we're immune from it. You know, there's a lot of misconceptions out there about who is an opioid abuser. From our experience, it's, you know, high schoolers all the way to the elderly. There's no set demographic. There's no set type of person that we look for when we look for an opioid user. This is something that every community, every gender, every race is dealing with at their own level. And it's something that, it obviously is something that we felt that it was necessary for us to start taking some proactive measures to help address in our community. We call these are auto injectors, okay? And what they are is they're an auto injector for when people have overdosed on opioids. They're small little cartridges. They're probably about a half an inch thick and about 3 to 3.5 inches wide. You know, we can carry them right in our pockets or in our bags while we're on patrol. And they're very simple to use. Every officer in the East Lansing Police Department was issued 2 of these. And since them being rolled out just a few months ago, we've had 2 successful saves using them for subjects that were currently overdosing.
If you or someone you know needs help with opioid addiction, click on WKAR.org. We have a link to the state's website with treatment and prevention resources. You're listening to Current State on WKAR, and let's now shift gears and talk about medical marijuana state licensing. And Capitol correspondent Shayna Roth is here with the very latest.
Hello, thank you for having me.
We're closing in on the deadline, you know, for folks to start getting their applications in.
Yeah, so the people can start putting in their state applications in mid-December. And right now, Laura and the Medical Marijuana Board, they're really kind of trying to firm up some of these details about, you know, what are you going to need to show in order to get an application? How much is your application going to cost? There's a lot of details going into this. And what they're going to be doing, kind of the latest thing that we found out, is that they're going to be having these educational meetings. And unlike their current board meetings, which tend to just be in Lansing or East Lansing, they're going to be essentially a roadshow. And Laura is going to pack up and they're going to go across the state. They're going to Saginaw, they're going to Novi, they're going to Traverse City. They're going all around and they're basically going to be working with folks and talking to them and explaining to them, you know, this is the application process. These are the things that you need to show. This is how much your background check is going to cost. This is how much startup capital you're going to have in order to qualify. And what we're finding is that people are very interested in these meetings. The Detroit Free Press reported earlier this week that nearly 2,000 people have signed up for these classes across the state. And what will be interesting to kind of keep an eye on is these are probably going to be a lot of people that haven't been able to get to those board meetings. They haven't been able to voice their frustrations or ask questions or, you know, present any concerns And it'll be interesting to see, you know, what Laura learns from them. You know, it could be a very much a two-way street of, you know, Laura's educating these people, but these people are also voicing their concerns. And we'll see if any changes come as a result of it.
And for people who may not know, what does LARA stand for?
Well, LARA is the Licensing and Regulatory Affairs Department, and that is the sort of like overarching umbrella that houses a sort of medical marijuana advisory department, and then sort of below them is the Medical Marijuana Advisory Board. And LARA is the one that's really going to be making and having the final say on all these different rules that we're kind of hearing about. And the board itself, that board that's been having all of these different meetings, they're more of an advisory position. And they're, you know, they can talk to Laura, they can give suggestions for different laws or different rules. But really what when they're really going to come into play, where their power is really going to come from, is when you start submitting those applications, and then they can start approving and denying those licenses.
So most of these meetings have happened in Bath Township right here in the Lansing area. So this will really help those people who are interested that live up north or in the Upper Peninsula in Detroit, which I'm sure has a large market as well.
Absolutely. And a lot of their meetings, as far as I know, have been live streamed. So people have been able to watch the different board meetings. I believe they also have some sort of a comment section on LARA's website. But for a lot of people, this is going to be their first opportunity to really like look at the people that are making these decisions, to really voice their concerns, and two, to hear firsthand, you know, what do I need to do, instead of, you know, kind of trying to root around on a website and figure out like, okay, I need this. What does this mean? That you can really have a one stop, you know, several hours where they're just sitting down and they're learning and, you know, taking notes and being like, okay, this is what I need to do. Can I do this? And oh, by the way, why do I need to do it this way?
Just for clarification, just because you have the state application, you know, in Lansing, there's another application process you have to go to in for most cities as well, right?
Right. So we're seeing that several different areas, cities, municipalities are opening up their own licensing application processes. And I checked in with Laura, and, you know, because it's kind of confusing for some people, like, you know, okay, I heard I need to get this state license, but my city is also talking about a license. What do I do here? And what happens is you should probably, if you're interested in getting into this, you should check with your local government and find out, do they require some sort of license or some sort of approval in order for you to open up shop, to be a grower, to be a transporter, any of these different businesses that you can have in the medical marijuana game. And then they will probably have their own sort of separate application process, and maybe even their own separate kind of rules and regulations that you're going to need to follow. But that piece of paper or whatever sort of approval they give you is worthless without the state application. So just because you get that city certificate, you still need to go through and you still need to cross all of the T's and dot all the I's and go through all the hoops of getting that state application as well.
And I understand there is a few more education sessions coming up.
Yes. So these education sessions are starting in November. They're going to be 3-hour classes that are put on by LARA. And it looks like a lot of them are going to be starting at 9 a.m. There's one on November 8th in Novi, November 9th in Saginaw, November 13th in Traverse City, November 14th in Kalamazoo. And then they're going to do 2 sessions on November 15th in East Lansing. And that's kind of all the places that they're going to be. So if you live nearby and you're even considering getting into the medical marijuana game, they strongly urge you to go to these different sessions. It's a great way to learn about it, to ask your questions, to voice your concerns. And, you know, it's one of the few times that they're going to be coming to you.
And we will have a list of all those locations and times on the Marijuana in Michigan section of WKER.org. Well, thank you. That is Shayna Roth, who you can hear mornings on Morning Edition, weekdays between 5 and 9 a.m., and on All Things Considered, weekday afternoons from 4 to 7 p.m. Thanks again, Shayna.
Always a pleasure.
A Lansing area group is working to rename part of Grand River Avenue in Lansing after civil rights activist Cesar Chavez. WKAR's Carell Vega reports.
Ignacio Andrade is co-chair and co-founder of the MSU Cesar E. Chavez Commemorative Celebration and a member of the Lansing for Cesar E. Chavez Committee. He says renaming Grand River Avenue would be a step toward making Lansing a more inclusive city in the wake of recent demonstrations of intolerance in the city, including a racially charged attack against a Latino man.
What's important to know is that the capital city, I feel, is one city with two potential paths. One path toward further hostility and hate, and the other path is toward acceptance and inclusion.
The City of Lansing Memorial Review Board voted on August 15th to approve the renaming of the stretch of Grand River Avenue between Oakland Avenue and Pine Street. On August 28th, the Lansing City Council received the application and was given 90 days to vote on the renaming. Several businesses wrote letters to the Memorial Review Board in opposition of the renaming, including Jennifer Estel, the creative director of Redhead Design Studio. The business is no longer located on Grand River, but was for nearly a decade. Estel says she supports a renaming, but thinks there are better options than Grand River.
If it were up to me, I would suggest that we go bigger and better. We are Michigan's capital city. I would love to see us rename Capitol. That's named after a building. That doesn't mean anything necessarily. The ability to educate and get in front of the eyeballs of legislators and tourists and kids who going on field trips would be far more significant.
Andrade says Grand River Avenue has historical significance to the Latino and Hispanic community in Lansing. The Lansing City Council has until November 26 to vote on the renaming. Karel Vega, WKAR News.
This is WKAR Morning Edition host Brooke Allen. I'm a mom, a Michigan native, and a morning person. Whether you live in Albion or Ann Arbor, Detroit or DeWitt, Jackson or St. John's, Lansing or Lanesburg, our goal is to wake you up with fresh, fact-based journalism and features that will make you the most informed at the office or school. Join me for Morning Edition with Brooke Allen weekday mornings from 5 to 9 a.m. here on 90.5 FM, WKAR, your NPR station.
And it's time on Current State to talk sports, and here with us is Current Sports host Al Martin.
Reg, how you doing?
I'm great. I survived homecoming last week. Football team, you know, there was a little heart-pounding moments there until the last quarter.
Very true. You know, Reg, you look at this team right now, and for Michigan State football, they're playing so good defensively. Right now, ranked number one in the Big Ten Conference when it comes to defensive efficiency. Special teams is playing awesome. But I feel like the reason why Michigan State football isn't getting a lot of national pub is because when you evaluate that offense, they're not a lights-out offense that is putting up a bunch of points. If you look at that Indiana game on Saturday for homecoming, Reg, I mean, heck, Michigan State's offense didn't sniff the red zone until 6 minutes left in the game. When Brian Lewerke needs to make a play or has to make a moment to put points on the board to win a game, he has shown up time and time again. And that's what's so encouraging. In the big moments when Michigan State's backs are against the wall, he has shown up.
So last weekend was MSU Madness and the opening of the new part of the Breslin Center. So very exciting time for MSU basketball. And this weekend, they're headed to Grand Rapids. What's happening Sunday?
Yeah, well, you know, I talked with head coach of the MSU men's basketball team, Tom Izzo, earlier this week, and, you know, he didn't even expect this game to take place. They put in a bid for it, and the NCAA surprisingly approved it. But it will be a charity college basketball exhibition game against Michigan State and Georgia. This will take place in Grand Rapids, and as soon as it was announced, Reg, I mean, the tickets sold out in like 24 hours. And these are two great programs. Michigan State right now, depending on which poll you look at, they're either ranked number one or number two heading into the preseason polls. And Georgia right now is going to be one of the best college basketball teams in the SEC. With that being said, it is exhibition, so it's not, I don't expect these two teams to be, you know, going for blood on Sunday. However, it's a great game. It gives, you know, fans an opportunity to go out and enjoy some quality college basketball while also raising funds for hurricane relief in Atlanta, Georgia, as well as the hometown of Lou Rawls, Tum Tum Nearing Jr. out in the Bahamas. And also, Tom kind of even expanded it from that. Hey, we're taking all funds and we're trying to ship those also to Houston, to Florida, to Puerto Rico. So it's just a great game, a great event for an even better cause.
And it's not just the men's basketball team that's playing on Sunday. We also have the women's.
Yes, the MSU women's basketball team, they will be holding a private scrimmage against Toledo. This is a nice warm-up for them because they don't begin the official exhibition year until this upcoming week. But, you know, we had Susie Merchant on Current Sports earlier this week, actually on Thursday, and Susie just kind of talked about how excited she is about this year. I mean, Reg, they held Media Day on Monday, and I was out there at the Breslin, and out of the 6 years I've been covering this team, this may be the closest knit of players I've ever seen in this program. They love, you know, being around each other, both not only on the court, but off the court as well. There's so much chemistry there. I'm really excited about the X's and O's pieces of this squad as well. I mean, Brandy Agee, she's from Detroit. This will be her senior season. She has already been selected as a preseason Big Ten player. She's poised to have a great year. I'm looking forward to that. Also, Taya Reimer, the transfer from Notre Dame, she's expected to have a great year as well this season. And even I'm also excited to see how Taryn McCutcheon, the East Lansing product, I'm excited to see how Taryn McCutcheon adjusts to this new role of not having Tori Jankowska, as Tori, of course, graduated and went to the WNBA draft last year, but not having Tori Jankowska, the program's all-time leading scorer, not there to lean on. And now this is her opportunity to really, you know, grab the horns of the bull right now and be that leading point guard for the squad. So I'm excited to seeing what, you know, what Taryn McCutcheon can do out there as well. But an exciting season, Reg, and I love hoop, so this is one of my favorite times of the year.
Well, you can hear Al talk about his favorite times of the year, favorite thing, sports, every weekday afternoon at 1 o'clock on AM 870 and FM 94.5 WKAR on Current Sports. Thanks, Al, for joining us.
Anytime, Rich. Thank you.
Just ahead in the next half hour of Current State, Hillary Clinton comes to Michigan.
I don't care whether you're a Republican, a Democrat, an independent. I don't care. If you are an American, this should alarm you.
The former presidential candidate's comments on Trump and her advice on getting sexism out of politics. Plus, a road trip full of mystery for an MSU professor takes him into a painful past of America's history.
You know, the past impinges and defines the present.
And later, Halloween is not the only holiday coming up. Millions will celebrate the Day of the Dead soon.
And this is a way of making them real again, not only for yourself, but for the people you're talking to about them.
Find out how you can honor the departed coming up on Current State.